This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
A championship. Introducing the Crusher.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. We are your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. And today we get back to our monthly war on sugar. As we have a great guest lined up today, Dr. Sanjeev Chopra, professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School, will join us. He's an author, speaker, and researcher, as well as, of course, teaching medicine at Harvard Medical School, not too shabby. He wrote an article recently talking about why this is the best beverage you can drink. And the article was referring to coffee. Now, I've never been a coffee drinker. My parents drank coffee. Everybody around me drank coffee. I love the smell of coffee. I've just never gotten into drinking coffee no other reason than just it never appealed to me. But I am going to start drinking coffee. Today, we're going to discuss why coffee might be one of the best beverages you could possibly drink, how much you should drink, and what are the exact benefits. But we're also going to get into a conversation with Dr. Chopra about, you know, just general wellness type stuff as we, again, wage war on sugar. If you remember, every month we've dedicated one show to our war on sugar, and Dr. Chopra may very well get himself a five-star position with all of his research and the topics that we will discuss today. We look at the global epidemic of childhood obesity, or obesity in general, all the health issues that are related to it. And now, of course, in my world, the world of sport performance, the impact on performance and athlete development, it is undeniable at this point. And the research is showing us more and more as to what's happening in the consumption of all the sugar and simple carbohydrates that we have in our diet, and how we can turn it around and steer it better. In our priorities for sport performance and athlete performance in general, we have four major priorities when athletes, teams, or organizations come into our program. They're not the only four priorities you can have, but in all of our work, in all of my experience in high-performance sport, these are the four most important things. If these are not addressed accordingly and in a timely fashion right at the beginning of the implementation of a program, nothing else can really happen at its potential, if that makes sense. It can't happen at the highest level possible. Number one is rest and recovery. Of course, you've heard me say it before, and I apologize if I'm repeating it, but it's too important not to say again. Every single program we build is built around rest and recovery. And inside of that, the most important factor is sleep. Sleep, the quality of sleep, the amount of sleep, and when you're going to get it and how you're going to get it is all planned. Now listen, the amount of rest and recovery might just be downtime. It might be massage. It might be time just doing nothing. There's also active recovery as well, where guys might be going to yoga, or they might be doing something that's not really structured, bike riding, walking, playing golf, but it also might be something that's just relaxing, laying, watching a movie. Everything is accounted for. The amount of rest and recovery that an athlete or person has. Think of high profile jobs like the police force, or our EMTs, or our firefighters. It is critical. These guys are in life and death situations. You know, we talk about the fun and fancy of sport like it's all serious, but we look at our military, our police, our emergency response people, they're facing life and death situations, and it's all important that they're performing mentally and physically at the highest level possible. So the principles of human performance go from the executive C-suites at every major corporation right down to the assembly line, from the ownership and managerial suites of every single sporting organization right down to the clubhouse guys and the guys on the field, to our military, to our police, to our emergency response people, firefighters. And it's all important. The principles of human physiology are the same. If we're not rested, we cannot perform properly, period. Rest and recovery is number one. Number two is nutrition. It is so important. We know it impacts absolutely every single aspect of every action you will perform today, tomorrow, and every day forward. We do know, however, that if you have a plan and you follow the plan, things can go awry, but you will never make more than a 24-hour mistake. Our athletes never make more than a 24-hour mistake. If due to travel or time issues or they miss a meal or a certain nutrient or they don't hydrate enough, we know the way the body works on its day-to-day cycle, and we know the way that we plan out our nutrition, our athletes recover and get back on track within a 24-hour cycle, which is interesting to note. Priority number one is rest and recovery and sleep. Number two, nutrition. Number three, posture. That's our setup. That's a conversation for another day. But we know we have to have muscle balance. We have to have skeletal alignment. We have to have range of motion around the joints in order to operate properly. And that's very important. If our setup is wrong, we do know for a fact that risk of injury goes up. And we also know that it can be detrimental to performance if it's in the danger zone. So something we address. And then listen to me, before we ever send an athlete into competition or into the weight room to get huge and strong, we have to teach them how to move. Movement is our fourth and for me, maybe the most important and also the most fun of all the priorities, because this is where the action happens. And if you look at what Canada has done in their sports science program that's come out of their real push to be successful at both the Winter and Summer Olympics, they've developed something called the Long-Term Athlete Development Program, where it takes an athlete from the day they're born through a scheduled level of developmental steps that have to occur in order. We know that over the developmental cycle of a human being, there are windows of opportunity. There's windows of opportunity for developing speed. We know there's critical times where skills must be presented and addressed and learned. We know that there's a second window to develop speed. We know there's windows for cardiovascular performance. And if these windows are missed, there's no getting them back. You can't be sitting on a TV in front of your TV when you're 45 years of age watching the ball game going, I can do that. Pick up a ball glove and throw a ball 95 miles an hour. If you can, please call me. Please call me. Or step onto an NFL football field and compete with those athletes that have dedicated their life to learning, or stepping onto the court with Federer or Roenick. You know, it just doesn't happen that way. It's a developmental process. Now, one of the issues that we're seeing, of course, is we've gotten crazy about developing. We've taken maybe the fun out of the game, and a big part of high performance development is the fun factor, especially early on. Early specialization in sport is detrimental to top-end performance. It lowers the ceiling. There's no question about it. There are caveats to this, however. The early developmental sports like gymnastics and maybe figure skating, okay, those are sports where early specialization really do bode well for the athletes and their performance. But typically, those career paths are over fairly early in the life cycle. We're now seeing athletes step into the NHL, the NFL, you know, young athletes that typically wouldn't be ready, you know, 18, 19, early 20s even, stepping into the pro leagues and impacting the game. But on the other end, because of the way we're training and what we know about athlete and human performance right now, we're also seeing athletes play late into their 30s and into their 40s, and a lot of them still could play. No question about it. So it's an interesting time in not just sport, but human development as we learn all these great things. When it comes down to our war on sugar, however, this is a very, very important part of our monthly programming because of all the issues we're seeing, not just in sport, but outside of sport. And for those of you who are familiar with the show, you'll know the story that's driving me forward. At home, I have three beautiful daughters, and there are three perfectly different body types. We have the endomorph, we have the mesomorph, we have the ectomorph. Here's the interesting thing. There's a real tight genetic pool. Of course, it's me and my wife. And we have a pretty controlled environment in terms of activity, you know, our interest. You know, we're water skiing, we're skiing, we're out playing baseball. You know, we're outside, we're active. The diet and nutrition is very similar. But this is where genetics, and this has been fascinating for me, this is where genetics really plays its role down the line somewhere. We have an ectomorphic sort of a body type, which is the pear shape, heavier set, really sort of prone to easy weight gain. We have the muscular side, and then we have the ectomorphic, the lean, doesn't matter what she eats. We have three incredibly different body types in virtually the same setting. Just to give you an idea of the battle we're up against, all of these kids eat the same, but each one of those bodies processes the food they eat incredibly different. So we've learned to become cognizant and aware of how each of those bodies operates different. And even if it's just serving size, but most importantly, the type of foods we're feeding those three bodies, you know, it is really important from a family standpoint. And of course, on my side, the story of my mother with early onset of Alzheimer's, dementia, you know, this is something that has been traced back to a lifetime of high sugar diets. My mom had a sweet tooth, and I've told the story on the show before, but I'd like to just refresh everybody's memory. We grew up on the farm. My dad's background prior to buying the farm for my grandmother was in television, and we moved out to the farm and grew up there as kids. And a few years ago, when my mom's condition deteriorated, my dad said, he says, listen, I have no proof of this. He says, I don't know why I think this, but I've got a strong feeling that the reason your mother's in the condition she is because of all the sugar she ate over the course of her life. You know, teaspoons of sugar in her coffee. She always liked the cakes and the cookies, which was great if you're a kid in that house. Trust me, really good. There is no better chocolate chip cookie and the cinnamon buns. Let me just tell you something about the cinnamon buns. Wow. Okay. So my dad says to me, you know, I can't justify this or tell you why I'm saying this, but it has to have something to do with all the sugar. Well, you know, recently over the last couple of months, we've been talking about all the latest research that indicates high sugar, high glycemic diets are directly correlated. Of course, we know with obesity, but so many other health issues that on the show, we've waged war on sugar. And we've had some great guests here in the last few months, and there's more to come as we're going to keep this rolling for sure. So if you have any questions, comments, or remarks on our war on sugar, any great data you've come across or studies, it would be much appreciated. Let's share it. Let's get it on the website, crushperformance.com. You can write to us there, send it there. I'm on Twitter, at Jeff Crush as well. I'm just sort of getting the handle of the social media stuff. So we've started a Facebook page as well. It's called The Talent Grid, and we're posting a lot of this information. Well, as a matter of fact, all of it there. But we're trying to hook up with experts from around the world to shed some light on what's going on in terms of the obesity and health epidemics, what's going on in terms of our sugar consumption and diet in general, and what we need to do in order to turn it around. Now, for me personally, I want this for my athletes. I know that nutrition is king when it comes to overall performance. For our Olympic athletes who will be competing in Rio in the next month, you know, it's very important that their nutrition is broken down to grams and milliliters, you know, on a minute by minute, hour by hour basis. For our multi-competition athletes, like our pro guys in NHL hockey or the NFL, NBA, our PGA guys who are going from tournament to tournament, our soccer guys, or especially our Major League Baseball guys in that crazy schedule, managing diet day to day is a very, very different animal. We're looking at a general performance output for those multi-competition athletes. For the event athletes, like the golfers, the tennis players, and of course our Olympic athletes, it's a very different animal. We have to try to peak the training performances to maximize competition performances over a period of time. And nutrition plays a massive, massive role in that. Over the course of a lifetime, what we're learning on the show here over the last few months is that the implications of high sugar, high carbohydrate diets, high simple carbohydrate diets, is absolutely devastating to long-term health. We've had reports now linking it to certain types of cancer, including lung cancer. Of course, we've had it linked to diabetes and all of those issues, of course, and then everything that goes along with obesity. Brain disease and Alzheimer's, though, they're calling it type 3 diabetes. Diabetes of the brain. That's the one that's really getting me, because this is relatively new research on the planet. You know, we're really starting to link the issues between high sugar, high glycemic diets and brain function, which for me and my mom is a very important conversation. but also looking forward to my children. Very important, especially as everybody who listens to the show knows we spend so much time digging in and understanding head injuries in sport and concussion, and talking to the guys at the Boston University and the Concussion Legacy Institute and Dr. Mrazek over at the University of Alberta to get a better understanding of what's going on in the brain when there's an injury in sport. Well, man, the correlation, of course, we know. We've seen it before in a lot of different areas. Take the medical field and pharmaceutical field, for example. A lot of the steroids and drugs and PEDs that the athletes are now using or have used in the past have come out of medical research. Medical research to legitimately cure disease. It just so happens that every now and then one of these products they produce to battle disease state or a health issue has incredible human performance implications as well. And of course, you know where that's going. It's trickling right into the sport performance field. So the crossover here is fantastic. Our war on sugar, everybody, is not about just specifically obesity and diabetes. It's not specifically about sport performance and performing better on any given day or for any given event. We're trying to take a long-term picture here of what's happened in the past, what's going on, and what we know right now, and what do we need to look for going forward to help you and your families, your teams, and everybody around you operate at the highest level possible. So we're proud to bring you these shows. Today, I'm really, really excited as we're going to spend some time with Dr. Sanjiv Chopra, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, author, speaker, and researcher. Get ready as we wage war on sugar right after this with Dr. Chopra.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at CrushPerformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. If you want to get in touch with us, do it. CrushPerformance.com. Blogs, podcasts, newsletters, and send us your smart remarks. Always appreciated. Any ideas you want for future shows, anything you want us to look into, hey, get to us there for sure. Today, we are waging war on sugar once again. We dedicate one show each month to this very, very worthy cause as we bring some of the latest research and some of the world's experts on the topic of obesity, diet, nutrition, and overall well-being. Today is no exception as we are joined by Dr. Sanjiv Chopra, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. He's an author, a speaker, and a researcher. And Dr. Chopra, I would like to thank you for joining us today.
Delighted to be on your show.
Well, each month we dedicate one show to our war on sugar as we try to sort of steer people in the right direction with all the myths and misconceptions and mass marketing out there. It's a real complex landscape right now when it comes to marketing and understanding what's good for you. You know, Dr. Chopper, you said at one time, without health, we are impoverished. Health is truly king. Do you think we're maybe losing sight of what's truly valuable in the big picture?
I think you're absolutely right. I think there are two things that we should focus on in our lives. And one of them is finding our purpose in life. Each one of us has a singular purpose in life. Mark Twain once said, the two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. But we can't live that purpose in our lives if you're not healthy. How could you do that? And I think health is wealth, the old adage. And there are easy ways to become and be healthy. And right now we're facing this epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes and what's called metabolic syndrome. And part of the metabolic syndrome is a liver disorder. I bring it up because I'm a liver specialist. And it's now the most common liver disorder in our country. And it's called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So under the microscope, if you do a biopsy, it looks just like alcoholic liver disease, but these individuals are not drinking. And what do they have? They have type 2 diabetes and obesity. And out of those 40 million, it's estimated that 5 million will become cirrhotic or have cirrhosis, which then leads to liver failure, risk of liver cancer, and the need for a liver transplant. Already, it is the second leading cause of liver transplantation in our country. NAFL, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, with cirrhosis and complications. And the estimate is that in the next 10 years, it'll be the dominant indication, because we do have a treatment for chronic hepatitis C now in the form of pills. They're expensive, but we have a very, very, very high cure rate, approaching 90-95%. So I think we owe it to the public to inform them about obesity and diabetes and liver disease and sugar and artificial sweeteners. I think the public is more aware of salt and its link with hypertension. I have a relative, I'm not going to name him, who used to put 8 spoons of sugar in his coffee. And I said, what are you doing? And not healthy.
Very problematic for sure. And I think that's something that's maybe more common than we think. We see it every single day at every drive-thru of probably every coffee shop on the continent for sure. We're talking with Dr. Sanjiv Chopra, the professor of medicine at the Harvard School of Medicine, also an author, speaker. The website is sanjivchopra.com. And, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned the liver side of things. There's so many issues that we're facing, of course, in our war on sugar. We've waged war here on our show. And I think that it's been interesting when we go through all the stats and all the data, looking at the issues we're facing. You know, if we think back, Dr. Chopra, to the 70s, where the main focus and concern, I think, coming out of the medical field was, hey, we have to reduce fats. We have to reduce certain bad fats in the diet, and got to really focus more on that part of the diet rather than the carbohydrates and sweeteners, which are now the real big cause. The weight loss industry is a $60 billion industry right now, and yet we're seeing obesity and health issues related to obesity triple in the last 10 years. There's a major malfunction here.
Absolutely. And it's it's very tragic, because not only there is a certain stigma attached to obesity, but it's linked with hypertension, with stroke, with heart disease, with liver disease. 20 cancers are more common in people with obesity. Women with breast cancer who have obesity have a higher risk of recurrence. Women with breast cancer who exercise, they've been treated for breast cancer, and now they exercise, they have a lower risk of recurrence. So there are simple things we can do. I think the way to tackle this is to start educating the children in middle school, in high school, and then have them be our advocates to go talk to the families at home. The other possible way to do it is through comics or books or people that they look up to. And who do young people look up to? They look up to sports people. So interesting, we are on a sports network. You know, they look up to celebrities. TV and movie, to Hollywood, to Bollywood. We can somehow get some of those celebrities involved and have them have a voice, but together with young people, with children, it could create an impact. I think for doctors, they should, without any honorarium, be happy to go and give talks at their local middle school. Our Surgeon General is concerned, Vivek Murthy. I happen to know him. He's a terrific young person, trained in Boston at Harvard Medical School. And he's talking about obesity and the epidemic. He's also talking about the amazingly high burnout rate amongst physicians. Mm-hmm. And not only burnout, but how do we tackle resilience? It's a hidden epidemic of suicide amongst doctors. And
really?
No one talks about it. You know, the rate of suicide in male doctors in our country is 1.2 times the average population. In women doctors, 2.3 times. In dentists, 5 times. five times the national average. What are we doing? How are we taking the joy out of people's professions? You know, we have them on a treadmill and say, see more patients, see more patients, see more patients. You got 15 minutes to see a patient.
Yeah, right.
And fill out more paperwork, fill out more paperwork. And the physicians don't want to do that. They want to talk to their patients. They want to listen to them. They want to try and help them. And we need to address this. This is an epidemic in our country, and now it's spreading in other countries as well.
Yeah, Dr. Chopra, you know, the doctors do come under fire as well. There's only so much they can know, and I think we're seeing a shift towards specialization a little bit. But, you know, you go to a family doctor or a general practitioner, they have a vast knowledge, but they cannot possibly know it all. And yet, you know, they come under the gun at times for not knowing. And I guess, you know, that's another area that, you know, we don't really consider. There's a lot to know out there, and it's really possible.
Huge amount to know. You're absolutely right. And so what happens is we practice defensive medicine.
Right, exactly.
We order tests and we order CAT scans and blood tests when the chance of that being positive or showing an abnormality is minuscule. But, you know, we don't have time to refer, pick up the phone, talk to a colleague. In the old days, you'd see doctors sitting having lunch and coffee together. Now everyone is running.
Yeah.
You know, they come into the cafeteria, grab a coffee and a sandwich. They're eating it as they're walking back to the clinic where more patients are waiting for them. It's a travesty, and it has to be addressed. It really has to be addressed.
Dr. Chopra, I think we're seeing this in every facet of life. You know, in the sporting world, I have this thing that we've been seeing, you know, this rush to be perfect at sport. Parents rushing their kids feeling the pressure to rush. It's this peak by Friday mentality that goes well beyond sport, of course. But boy, we've got to steer this ship in a different direction somehow, and I think we'd all be better off if we did.
Yeah, I think, you know, what has happened in our society is that we focus too much on success. And Albert Schweitzer, who was a physician, theologian, musician, humanitarian, he actually was a very humble man. He opened a hospital in Gabon in Africa with his wife, who was a nurse. In 1952, he got the Nobel Peace Prize. And talk about humility, he said, now I have to go earn it.
Hmm.
And one of the two hospitals I work at, major teaching affiliates of Harvard Medical School, so one of them is called Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center is a sister hospital of the hospital in Gabon. And a few years ago, we celebrated the centennial. And Albert Schweitzer once said so beautifully, he said, success is not the key to happiness. Happiness is the key to success.
Mm.
So I think we're focusing on the wrong thing. As parents, you know, we want our kids to excel, like you said, on the track and also in class. And, you know, you see parents berating their kids or berating the referee or the umpire. There are fist fights in communities between parents and umpires of Little League. What is going on? Instead, we should be focusing on our children and you know, colleagues and friends and everyone being healthy and being happy. The Greeks didn't use the word happy. They used a word called eudaimonia for happiness, which literally translated means human flourishing. So if we are flourishing and we're happy, then all the other things will fall into place. You know, we'll be better at work, we'll be better in our interpersonal relationships, we'll be more creative in our writing, in our broadcasting, in our speaking, in our care of patients. We'll be more compassionate. That's what we need to do. We need to address some of the root causes of what is plaguing our society.
We're talking to Dr. Sanjiv Chopra, professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School. He's also author, speaker. The website is sanjivchopra.com. Fantastic resource right there, Dr. Chopra. Well, you know, a lot of your books are steering people in that direction. Just a really good mindset and guide to how people can sort of, you know, capture that attitude that we're talking about, you know, getting back to the things that are important. And you have a great book out there. It's called The Big Five, which I think really can simplify a plan that people need to get back on track.
Yeah, thank you so much. There's one other thing I really want to mention. Here are five things that I said. I should have spent time more with friends. I should have traveled more. I should have been the bigger person and said, I'm sorry. I should have had the courage to pursue my dreams and aspirations, and I should have said, I love you, more often. You know who says these things, Jeff? These are people in hospice, missing imminent death. These are their greatest regrets. Nobody says, I should have made more money, I should have driven a Ferrari and a Tesla, and you know, I should have lived in a bigger mansion, I should have worked harder. And the point of all of this is, we should be doing all these five things now, right? And spending more time with friends, saying I love you, pursuing our dreams, traveling more. Jim Rohn, a best-selling author, is a great statement. He says, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with.
Hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
That is, yes.
Choose your friends.
Yep.
Eleanor Roosevelt, one of my favorites, once said, small minds discuss people. Average minds discuss events. Great minds discuss ideas. So choose your friends. If you have friends who are overweight and who don't exercise, you'll become overweight. This is a well-known phenomenon that Nicholas Christakis has studied. And if your friend's friend is overweight, you have a greater chance of becoming overweight. So no stigma against overweight people, but if you join that group and they're great friends, then, you know, work on let's all together lose weight. Let's go for a walk. Let's have a competition. You know, I'll do 4,000 steps today. Can you do it? Yeah, I can do it. You could have a buddy in California, Oregon, in Singapore. And now with iPhones and apps, you can have a competition. One of the things we find in medicine that helps people exercise is called motivational interviewing. So you don't say to a patient who's overweight, I'm going to see you in 6 months. I want you to lose 20 pounds. Join a gym. That never works. Instead, you say to a patient, how important is it for you to lose weight on a scale of 1 to 10? Patient says, doc, 9, 10. How difficult is it to you lose weight on a scale of 1 to 10? They go, 9, 10. Okay, what could you do to lose 2 pounds in the next month? Well, doc, you know, I eat two donuts every morning. Maybe I'll, you know what, I'll cut down to one. I have 4 Cokes. I'm going to cut down to one. I put 2 spoons of sugar in my coffee. I'm going to put 1 spoon. So you turn to the patient and say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how difficult is that? I can do that. That's like a 4. Okay? You say, what about exercise? I don't like to exercise. Is there any exercise you could do? Well, I could swim. You know, I have a pool at home or I have a gym next to me with a pool. I could swim. How many minutes? 45 minutes. How often? 4 times a week. I take a prescription pad. I put his name. I sign my name. And I, for prescription, swimming 4 times a week, 45 minutes each time, number of refills, infinite.
Powerful medicine.
It works.
Powerful, powerful medicine.
It turns out it works. Now, in that motivational interviewing, not once did I tell the patient what to do.
Right.
He told me what he could do. And we actually have taught this around the country in a conference called Current Clinical Issues in Primary Care to up to 6,000 clinicians in Anaheim, 4,000 in Boston, that motivational interviewing works for smoking cessation, it works for weight loss, and this is a very unique technique. But writing the prescription also works.
Oh, veteran tricks of the trade right there. I really, really like that approach, you know, letting the person organize their future for themselves, motivational interviewing. We do very similar things in the sport performance world for sure. It's all powerful. We have to cut out for a quick break, but when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Dr. Chopra and we'll find out why coffee might be the best beverage you can possibly drink right after this on Crush Performance.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. Today, we are back to waging war on sugar. It's our War on Sugar episode, and we are joined by Dr. Sanjiv Chopra, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, author, speaker, researcher. SanjivChopra.com is the website. We're having a great discussion as we're waging war on sugar here on the show once again. The conversation today is leading towards the more holistic approach to just getting back on track. You know, you mentioned earlier, Dr. Chopra, the issue with children. And the fact that that should be a major focus. Isn't it funny, though? And I just want to get your opinion on this, because this is something that kind of is a sore spot with me. When I see the big food companies really keying their marketing to that next generation, when we're trying to battle on the other side to educate them on what's right, here is an epic battle of two titans right here.
Absolutely. I think the big companies are now realizing it. And there's been so much public pressure and discussion and on, you know, radio shows like yours, but also on TV, in the press. Remember McDonald's, you could go and get a whole meal or...
Yeah, the kids meal or, yeah.
They had a nice name for it. But as part of it, you got a toy. And so kids wanted to eat this unhealthy food with French fries and ice cream and milkshakes with lots of sugar added because they would get the toy. And ironically, the people of the lower socioeconomic class can't afford the more nutritious food. You have to go buy it. You have to cook it. This could be a single mother. It could be a widow raising three children.
Yep.
And so take them to McDonald's. You know, take them to Burger King. Take them to Pizza Hut and get a fast meal. And the kids will be happy, and you know, but they're not going to be healthy. What an epidemic!
Yeah, it's.
I think the future leaders are the young people. You know, I have a definition. I've written a book on leadership, and given a talk maybe 200 times around the country and 20 times abroad. And I get asked the question, "All right, what's the definition of a great leader?" And I say, a great leader, like a great teacher, makes himself or herself progressively redundant.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
The followers take over. And I think the followers for you and me are going to be our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah, most certainly a focus on the children. Well, you talk about leadership in a lot of your writing, and of course in your lecture series, leadership is a major focus. And I think you're right. That is going to be one of the strategic moves in our war on sugar. But you mentioned something really interesting, the concept that you bring about when you talk about a manager and a leader. I thought this was a really interesting take.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like that. Maybe you could share that with us. But I do believe that, you know, if we start empowering our young people to, you know, think big picture and think long term, I think it would go a long, long way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, you know, we need both managers and leaders. And a manager, one can be an excellent manager but not a good leader. One could be a great leader but not a good manager. So what's the difference? I think managers do things right. Leaders do the right things.
Mm-hmm.
Managers are for today. Leaders are for tomorrow. They articulate a vision of hope and optimism. And it turns out, and then they inspire the followers to rise above the banality and strife of their common day existence and achieve a higher and common goal. And it turns out that if you see what followers look for in managers, there are four elements. The first one is stability. They want that person who's leading the organization or the CEO of the company or the dean of the medical school to have an even temper and be stable, not say certain things one day and totally opposite the next week. Second, as followers, we look for empathy and compassion in a leader. You know, the Dalai Lama was a keynote speaker for us at Harvard Medical School at a CME course, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he once said, be kind whenever possible, it is always possible.
Right.
Beautiful, right? So stability, empathy. The third is trust. If I say Jeff is trustworthy, it's I've paid you the highest compliment. You know, it's one of the most amazing statements. If I say you're praiseworthy, okay, you got a skill, you got a talent, you got a great radio show, But if I say trustworthy, that's a huge compliment. So stability, empathy, trust, and the last one is hope. So Napoleon was once asked to define a leader. He said, a leader is a dealer in hope. That was his definition.
I like it.
Right? So the mnemonic, if you want to remember for the listeners, is SET, S-E-T-H.
Yeah.
Stability, empathy, trust, and hope. And if we can do that in our schools, in our colleges, in our universities, in our companies, in our politics, and hold those four concepts, core principles, then we'll do well.
Isn't it interesting? You know, especially when we have so many scary, crazy things going on in the world today, a little internal focus might be nice. Dr. Chopra, I just wanted to get your comment on this as we talk about children, leadership, and looking to the future. The World Health Organization, a few years back, made maybe one of the most incredibly powerful statements I think I've heard in a long time when they announced, based on their global research, that we're looking at the first generation of children who will have a shorter lifespan than their parents. And boy, oh boy, that one hit home. I have three beautiful daughters at home. That one hit home for me.
Yeah. Can you believe that? If somebody had said that the World Health Organization is going to come up with a statement like this, you'd say, come on, no way. That's nuts.
It's nuts.
But that's what the statistics show. That's what the trajectory is until we change our ways.
And
it has to start at home. It has to start, you know, the kids before, in the evening, before doing homework, would go out and play baseball or basketball or tennis. And now they're sitting and on their iPhones and they're playing video games. And I think it's the obligation of us as parents, teachers, society, to address that. We can't blame the kids. We're not giving them enough attention. We are very busy. We are stressed if we're not doing the right things in our own lives. And this way they're occupied and, the quick dinner is being cooked, and that's not the right way.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And obesity and diabetes are at the root of the issues there. And, you mentioned something right there that's very important. Cooking at home with your kids is a very powerful tool and something you can easily do, not just to interact with your kids, but also teach them a few things when it comes to eating properly.
Yeah. And then finally, I wanted to quickly mention that one of the hottest topics in medicine right now is called microbiome. And actually, I've been giving a talk for the last year around the country called Microbiome, Man and Medicine. So in our digestive system, in our GI tract, we have trillions of bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
It's been called the second human genome, the inner bacterial rainforest. And it has implications in obesity, diabetes, liver disease, asthma, maybe autism, encephalitis, arthritis. And we need to be, you'll see some amazing discoveries in the next 5 to 10 years based on understanding the human microbiome and attempts to alter it and favorably affecting disease and promoting health. So artificial sweeteners, for example, alter the microbiome and actually make the blood glucose go higher. You have worse glucose intolerance if you take artificial sweeteners. So
that's so counterintuitive.
All of us have been saying, don't take artificial sweeteners.
Right.
Don't take artificial. If you're going to have a Coke, have a Coke. Don't have a Diet Coke. Sip it carefully, drink half of it, and you're better off with those 70, 60 calories than that so-called one awesome calorie in the Diet Coke. But now the science is catching up and showing us the mechanism.
Isn't that interesting? It's so counterintuitive, right? So people will have a Diet Coke so they can eat their big burger, or they'll have a low calorie cookie so they can have five instead of just one.
It's less guilty.
Right. It's a guilt complex. Isn't that interesting that science catching up and teaching us this sort of things? Because the artificial, again, we talk about big food and the marketing ploy out there. Artificial sweeteners have just taken over.
Yeah. Absolutely. But the microbiome is altered by the way we enter this world. If it was a C-section versus vaginal delivery, whether we live in rural Iowa or in New York City, whether we got antibiotics in the first 6 months or year of life, whether we travel, whether we are on medications like Nexium and Omeprazole, which inhibit acid, It's amazing what happens. And we're beginning to understand it. You know, there's an old saying, we've only seen the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
There's actually a wonderful African saying, and I was my last slide on this talk, I show a hippo and just the head of the hippo in the water in the river. And then I show the whole hippo, most of it, of course, is under the water surface. And I say, we've only seen the head of the hippo.
Oh, I like it. most certainly. Dr.
Yeah.
Chopra.
So that's where we are with our understanding of the microbiome. But there are now already commercial companies happening. The academic medical centers are opening centers within their academic institutions to study the microbiome, collaborating, applying for NIH funding, and so on. Very exciting field.
Well, it is. And something even more basic. My last question. Thanks for staying on so long here. But I just wanted to get to this because this is the article that led me to contact you to get this conversation going. Was your recent article talking about why this is the healthiest beverage you can drink, referring to coffee, of course. So many people are drinking coffee. But here's a very simple thing. And maybe coffee in its pure form has gone awry with all these flavorings. And as you mentioned, artificial sweeteners that we add now. But coffee at the root is a very, very powerful tool in overall health.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's the number one consumed beverage in the world now. 2.25 billion cups of coffee are consumed every day. It turns out the more coffee you drink, the healthier you are. But I generally say 2 to 4 cups of coffee a day. It lowers the risk of cirrhosis, type 2 diabetes, Parkinsonism, gout, cognitive decline of dementia, low risk of 5 cancers, primary cancer of the liver, endometrial cancer, skin cancer, colon cancer, and metastatic prostate cancer. So I talk about it because of all the implications in liver disease. I've been talking about it for 20 years in my liver talks around the country, around the world. And then about 2.5 years ago, an article appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the premier medical journal.
Of course.
And it said coffee drinkers, men and women, have lower total and cause-specific mortality. And that day I got like 200 emails of friends and colleagues around saying, Sanjeev, you're vindicated.
Yeah.
you know, so amazing. But when people ask me, I say, you know, please try to drink black coffee. If you want to put regular milk, not skim milk. Don't put half and half. Don't put skim milk. If you want to put half a spoon of sugar. I used to have 2 spoons of sugar with my coffee. And then I had a friend staying at our home. He was from Scotland. We were playing in a golf tournament. And my wife made breakfast in the morning. I made coffee. I turned to him. I said, how do you like your coffee? He said, black. I said, any sugar? He says, no, there was a huge shortage of sugar in the United Kingdom in 1985 or 86. My wife turned to me and said, this is an acquired taste. Why don't we just stop sugar? So I looked at him. I said, you know, I'm stopping sugar from today. This is like 25 years ago.
Mm.
And my wife had already made my coffee and put 2 spoons of sugar. I said, honey, please make me another cup without sugar. The first 2 weeks were tough. I was craving for that sugar. But after 2 weeks now, I don't put any sugar. And I have black coffee. And I'm totally used to it. If accidentally somebody puts half a spoon of sugar, I can't drink it. It tastes like syrup. So we can change our habits. Just like we acquired them, we can get rid of them.
Dr. Chopra, well, today is a big start for that. Listen, I really, really appreciate your time today. This conversation, well, we could go on for hours, I am absolutely sure, but this is a great start. I really appreciate you and your time today. The conversation has been enlightening for sure as we wage war on sugar. I think we've got to make you a 5-star general in our army in our war on sugar for sure.
Thank you.
So we really appreciate your time today.
I was delighted to be on your show. Good luck. And have a great time with your family. You know, they're the greatest joy in our lives, our children and our grandchildren. There was a best-selling Nobel laureate, Nobel laureate from India, Tagore. And this is one of my favorite sayings. He said, every child comes with the message that God is not yet discouraged of man. Isn't that beautiful? With all the war and all the troubles, every child comes with the message, God is not yet discouraged of man.
Very powerful words. Dr. Chopra, we've got to thank you for your time today. Much appreciated. A fantastic conversation, and we are definitely awarding you a 5-star general seat on our council as we wage war on sugar. Thank you so much for the time today. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the show. We are out of time. Got to thank Dr. Chopra once again, and coming up in the next few weeks, it's the Rio Olympic Games. These games have been plagued with many issues, but the sport is going to be spectacular. We're going to look at it over the next few weeks on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then.
Hello, baseball fans. I'm Rich Schreer, inviting you to join us for the Southern California Baseball Report with me, RBI Rich, and the skipper, former big league manager Kevin Kennedy. Each week, we take a look at the Angels and the Dodgers. It's the only podcast that takes care of all the baseball fans in Southern California. Please find us on TuneIn, Stitcher, and, of course, iTunes. And you can also find us on Facebook for all the latest information on our podcast. It's facebook.com/podcastdugout. Again, it's the Southern California Baseball Report with me, RBI Rich, and the skipper, Kevin Kennedy, on RadioInfluence.com.